Kill. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Hello.
I'm Dylan.
And this is the show where we bring you music remunerations.
Yeah, that's the word for it.
We're off to a great start. Reviews of albums that came out recently in the last 2 weeks from our little hidey hole here in Dublin.
Let's shoot the shit.
Absolutely. What we're going to talk about this week includes new albums from Tyler the Creator and Salt, plus some EPs from Beba Doobie, Joywave and Drug Church, as well as a look back at Susie and the Banshees' 1981 album, Juju.
That's a long... I only realized now it's 40 years.
40 years. 40th anniversary. We'll talk about it, but, you know, you would not know it. Mm. And we've got a 50th anniversary coming up. Well, actually, it was last year, but an actual release coming up of All Things Must Pass by George Harrison, which I'm very excited for. I think the official release of that is... possibly, the very start of August.
Yeah, we're here to just pretend things aren't as old as they actually seem. So
we're here to pick out those things that have stood the test of time. And as we'll discuss, I think Juju has stood the test of time.
Yeah.
But really, it's an interesting mix of stuff this week. I think the only artist here that we, apart from Susie, obviously, the only artist we haven't covered before is Salt. Although I was no stranger to their music.
Okay,
so
I was.
Lots of interesting talking points. But we begin. There's a lot to talk about this week. We begin with Tyler O'Connell, otherwise known as, a.k.a. Tyler the Creator, a.k.a. Bunny Hop, a.k.a. Tyler Baudelaire. So, Call Me If You Get Lost dropped...
The writer.
Yes.
The writer of music, the creator, the destroyer. What is he?
The repurposer, who knows?
He's a lot of things now.
He certainly is. So Tyler the Creator, former, I suppose, what's the word? Is it enfant terrible of Odd Future? You know, kind of came from a very kind of off-color style of rap, I guess, that people find quite abrasive. And I think, you know, he, by his own admission, feels as if he has kind of grown out of that style.
Yeah, kind of like the way Childish Gambino has.
Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of nerdish rap, nerdcore rap.
Yeah, and shock jock rap as well, a little bit, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But so Call Me If You Get Lost follows hot on the heels of my number one album of 2019, which was Igor by Tyler, the Creator.
That was?
Completely out of the blue. It just knocked me for six. I wasn't familiar with Tyler's previous work. I'd heard about Flower Boy, but that was kind of it.
Yeah.
And even in the time since, I fucking love Igor. I listen to it all the time. I have it on vinyl. And it was deservedly my number one. I have no regrets with that. I love that record so much. So this is big shoes to fill, right?
Sure.
And I don't think I've really gotten into it. There's bits and pieces that I like, but I haven't really found anything in his previous catalogue that I love as much as Igor.
A lot of Odd Future is really good. It's got a lot of people in that pot.
Yeah. I mean, Frank Ocean, I mean, Channel Orange is a classic, and I know Tyler had a pretty big hand in that. So,
yes.
That goes without saying. But yeah, but Call Me If You Get Lost, I think it was announced only about a week before it came out. It was a very, very, it was almost a sort of a surprise release. And I didn't know what to expect, but I was very excited, obviously, you know, but it, as I say, had big shoes to fill. And it's here.
It is.
And it's a longer, it's an unwieldier beast than Igor, which was such a tight, it was like a tight 30 minutes or something, right? 32 minutes.
Igor is much more a conventional modern day album.
Yeah.
This is more a smorgasbord.
Yeah.
A la old school 90s mixtapes.
I think you're right in the money there. I think this is closer to a mixtape than an album, especially given the context of Igor.
Yeah, as was the style at the time. If you wanted to get stuff out fast and frequent, you just have kind of a very inconsistent whatever you were writing at the time, just have it out.
But whatever any other artist in hip hop is writing is probably going to be different than Tyler, who's bringing in...
Things would get old, things would get stale, and you wouldn't have it on the next stuff. So
you
had to get all you had out at the time.
It's just interesting in that, you know, when we talk about a smorgasbord or a mixtape, like the different things that come in on this record, are, you know, it's like 70s French kind of like cafe music, spy movie music. Yeah. You know, there's like elevator music, there's like proper hard kind of gangster rap, there's trap, there's soul, there's like tons of soul in this record. There's actually very little of what made up the bulk of Igor, which was synth pop.
Surprised me.
Yeah.
Took me a little bit to adjust to what I was expecting and kind of hoping for. Subconsciously, you know, something that high, I'd be like, oh, I wonder why he isn't repeating again. But I kind of understand.
It's funny.
I kind of understand.
I understand too. I think, yeah, like the elephant in the room, I suppose, which is weird, is that you're right. This isn't a retread of Igor. He's actually drawing on very few of the same influences. Like Igor, I think this album seems to be on the sum of it. Tyler proving that, yes, he can still rap. Because there wasn't a huge amount of actual rap on Igor. Like there was a bit of it, and it was all excellent.
Yeah.
But you know, nearly every track here has Tyler kind of spitting bars and being generally excellent. I think you couldn't fault the rapping on this record, and a lot of the guests, some of them don't do it for me, but some of them are excellent.
Yeah, some of them who didn't do it for me, I could go off the bat with some of them. I guess I appreciate the fact that Lil Wayne is there and Hot Wind Blows.
Oh, I think he's great. You don't think he's great?
I think his flow and delivery is good. His words are that.
Okay.
Kind of retreading over typical Lil Wayne stuff.
Yeah. I mean, fair enough. It's not the most original.
He gets good momentum.
And but I love that line. The wind beneath my wings, desert eagle underneath my coat.
That's a good one.
Again, that's just like typical bragging, but it's just a great line, great delivery, and yeah. Okay, fair. I totally agree with you. And this has, I think, Wilshere has been rightfully kind of praised across the board for being, it's, you know, pretty incredible display of technique and vulnerability on Tyler's part, and lyrically it's brilliant. It tells a really interesting story, not something that you would hear every day, like where he's talking about a sort of a platonic friendship that was really like an emotional cheating kind of situation for the person involved and stuff. Really interesting, right?
Once again, like, kind of treading the line between what is Tyler,
the creator, and
what is just him, I guess.
Tyler Baudelaire, the so-called sort of wealthy, globe-trotting
playboy. Because some of this sounds so ridiculous for a guy so well off.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of, like, probably not current stuff, reflective stuff. Right. Stuff with his... Oh, what was this? There was one song here with a Mama Talk.
Yeah.
And some other parts in this, Massa.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of reflecting on, I think I saw it when his mom was like staying at a shelter.
Oh wow.
Living at a shelter, and he was just releasing his first breakthrough thing in 2009, reflecting on that stuff. So there's a lot of looking back at his lesser proud moments, I guess.
I think so, yeah. And he kind of could
take back over. But the stuff that made him, so it's interesting.
You know, he's like, I've never even liked the word bitch, I just thought it sounded cool and stuff. Particularly on that track, Manifesto as well, there's definitely a bit of...
Uh-huh.
There's definitely a bit of him treading over, like, why he feels as though he can't be the person that is the most outspoken about, like, issues affecting black people because... You know, of his past, he says, like, I was cancelled before. Cancelled was something that you did with your Twitter fingers, and you know, and that begins with a hilarious little skit or what have you of, you know, little, you know, it's like white bitch say, you need to say something about that. No, I don't. You know, it's
chuckled a lot.
It's very funny. The delivery is excellent there. So that's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of ego tripping in this album, but there's a lot of sincere stuff. So I'm kind of confused. At a lot of points,
it blurs the line between which is him and which is the persona, etc. But just to spin back around to my point about Igor, it's not relying on the overall sound of Igor, but it is a lot relying on the sounds of Igor throughout this record.
Instruments,
and people have sort of talked about this. It's been acknowledged to a certain extent, but there are so many elements from Igor that are repurposed in this. And to the extent that I just feel like it actually takes away from the originality of a lot of the tracks.
I'd say so, yeah. I'd agree.
You know, there's, I mean, Sweet, it's a huge amount of that is on Sweet, which itself is basically a rewrite of Earthquake. Yeah. You know, from Igor, it's the same, like the flow of the melody is the same, that the chord changes, the way that the third
good
repetition.
Featured artists.
Good featured artists. Yeah, Pharrell sounds good on that track, but I think Sweet, it's Tyler's favorite track on the album. I cannot get into Sweet because of how similar in feel and melody and everything it is to Earthquake. And then there's actually the synth sounds that show up that are identical to what's on Igor. I think it's I'm trying to like figure out it's so Corso is another one. It has that, yeah. You know, that boom 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 boom, that really harpy bass,
the sub bass,
that's from What's Good on Igor. And then there's the that kind of arpeggiator, the kind of almost like starlight arpeggiator that shows up a couple of times, that's from Igor. There's I could name this tons of examples.
Yeah.
But I feel I don't really understand why he's done it, because so much of the album is really fresh and original, and it takes from like all the flute tracks.
There's a lot of, you know, all that stuff. Crazy stuff that happens a little later. Around the Hot Wind Blows.
Hot Wind Blows. Onwards. That's Hot Wind Blows I just think is fantastic, and it's funny. You know, I think something that we could all use at this, you know, after a year and a half of not going anywhere is that, you know, we're in Geneva, that's in Switzerland, and talking about, you know, we've all got our toes out, someone's feeding me French vanilla ice cream, we could see the mountains from the lake, all that stuff is fantastic, and the you know, the music adds to it. This, I don't even go in for reggae, but there's a fantastic
it's later on, right?
Reggae vibe, it's somewhere towards the end, I can't remember which song it is, but it's you know, it kind of kicks into this like sort of dance hall type thing. And it's just, you know, it's fantastic, and the creativity on display on so much of this album, I think, does get slightly undercut by how much he just sort of copy pastes from the last record. I don't understand that.
And I'll say something that does kind of get in the way a little bit of the mixtape vibe. Mixtape, like a lot of the songs here are kind of very short and quick. They go past years pretty quickly, except for the long songs. They kind of destroy the momentum.
Do you think?
I would say, the mixtape momentum.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Wilshire definitely justifies its length, I feel.
It's got some good elements. I think it still runs out of steam a little bit later on, because it's just so goddamn long.
It is very long.
Compared to everything else. It's just contrasting to,
of course,
how the album is going. I think it kind of ends on a little bit more of a whimper than you'd hope.
Maybe, yes. Safari is going for that kind of end of album fugue where you've got the kind of brass coming in, and he's referencing back to things that happened earlier in the record, and
at least for me, he's kind of getting stuck between, should I just keep this a mixtape or should this be an epic concept album? It's very chaotic. It's somewhere between the two, and
it is.
I think I prefer either or, you know.
Yeah, I take your point. Like, you know, there's a lot of that sort of, like, quote-unquote, like, sexy 90s R&B, the kind of stuff that Sam Sparrow is paying homage to. Tracks like, you know, What's Your Name is one.
Yeah.
I love that line about, let's go to Canada, see some indie movies that you've never heard of. That's a great line. And it kind of comes in again. I kind of feel like there's a real throwback vibe to Run It Up as well. You know, but again, is it a throwback to something that I actually ever really enjoyed is the question. That's maybe where the break happens with this. I think this is really good. There's no denying the talent, you know, on display in a lot of these tracks.
He's, it's an improvement on what he started out as.
Yes, and the arrangement and the wordplay, and in a large part the feature guests. It's just, you know, I personally prefer synth pop meets hip hop, as opposed to, you know, I'm here for the fruity European like 80s, 70s, 80s stuff. I like that stuff. And I love the soul stuff, or like When I Rise to the Top, the old school hip hop stuff. It's more so that like that kind of 90s throwback R&B. There's a track on here that I really don't like. It's called Lemonhead, and I think it just really
dun, 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 dun. Kind of the DMX kind of
synth
trumpets.
Yeah, synth brass and this kind of it's kitschy, a trap, like, track.
I understand the nostalgic appeal to the tonality he's using in it, but
I don't know. Fair enough, that one didn't quite work for me, but I think, you know, Lumberjack, I like when he's a bit more threatening and dark, but then at the same time I think there were tracks that did that
better,
maybe better on Igor.
Yes,
you know, so it's kind of a mixed bag, but That's what I'd say. I think there's lots to like here. One thing, it's so ever present that you have to have an opinion about it is, welcome to the disco. Call me if you get lost. Ha ha, we out here. DJ Drama just like being the hype man for the entire record.
Yeah, it's fairly ever omniscient.
It really is. It really is. Yeah.
It's like it's kind of like a more present Dr. Deathify from the MCR album we got.
Right. Yeah. It's
fun. It's a little too much.
It's fun. It's a little too much. I think by the end, the only track that he is not going like, what up? Like in the background is Wilshire. That's the only one. He appears in every other track yelling something.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, if you're listening to the radio in America, that's kind of what it sounds like with a lot of the obnoxious presenters. So it's accurate.
It is.
A DJ set, right? Yeah. You know, a typical like homemade DJ set. There's 20 people in the sound of that. You hear the DJ announces stuff constantly trying to make it bigger than it is. I don't think this needs to be bigger than it is, though.
No. It comes across that way of, you know, when like the bully is towering over everybody and then there's the slightly weedy bully sidekick going like, yeah, you got him, you get him.
Yeah.
That's what it starts to feel like by the end.
This album sounds like it's trying to be a lot bigger than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
Whereas like Igor was proud to be as big as it was.
This one you can hear the ambition and then you feel like it maybe falls slightly short. Whereas in Igor, the surprise was you listen to it and you sort of went, oh my God, this is so ambitious. And you kind of came to that realization yourself. This kind of knocks you over the head with how ambitious it is. And like, that's not to say there are some great moments. I love, is it Lumberjack that's like the Rolls Royce pull up, black boy hop out, da 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 da. That's a great bit.
Yes,
music is fantastic. I love that it stops for him to like talk about his mom crying about like, I don't know, the opulence and stuff, but then he kind of starts again. And it's really good and it's got his excellent production.
I love the album cover as well.
Album cover's great. album cover is fantastic.
All his album covers are great.
Really brilliant. Like, really brilliant. There's so much around this that I love. And I think I think there's enough on it that to me, by the end, I feel the length of this.
You can pick and choose, thankfully.
I do. I still think it's excellent, though.
Yeah. Pretty good. Not really good, pretty good.
I think really good. I don't think excellent or like masterpiece, but I think really good. I will go back to this for sure.
Yeah.
I think my favorite line, I think actually my favorite track probably is Massa.
You can choose that one.
It's got that line about, you know, everyone I ever loved was loved in the shadows, and he does that great gravelly voice thing where he's like, you know, I sleep with a gun. I love what it's almost sort of a Busta Rhymes thing where he gets a bit of grit in his voice, but I love that line. Whether it's wealth talk or shit that's painful, I paint full pictures of my perspective on these drum breaks just for you to tell me it's not good from your lunch break.
Yeah, I love it.
Which is such a great snipe at, you know, people like us, I suppose. You know, people who are making casual criticisms of his life's work.
Yeah, like,
fantastic.
I love it. I mean, my favorite's probably, for my own tastes, is probably Juggernaut.
Oh yeah, okay.
It has a lot of old school stuff that's very reminiscent of Pharrell Williams' old stuff. So that was a lot of fun. Hearing that whole, all the elements put together. It's got a hammer and bass line to it. It's great.
Definitely, yeah, absolutely, for sure. Funnily enough, actually, there's a track that reminded me a bit of the Pharrell Williams guest on Run the Jewels 4.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think, the look at all the save masters posing on your dollar. It was as Zach De La Rocha as well was the other guest on that track. I'm trying to think which song it was. It's Juggernaut. Yeah, Juggernaut is the one. That, I think that's got a real feel. Same. It's the same tempo. It's got the same kind of cadence to it. Anyway, I think we've kind of said everything there is to say about it. Really, it's it really depends on how much you enjoy those forays he's made into different zones, and I am a bit surprised at how little people have picked up on all of the copy pastes from Igor.
I kind of did.
Yeah, I'm sure you did because you're familiar with it too. Very familiar with it too. But there's a lot of people coming in saying this is his most like his most musically adventurous outing, and I'm sort,
sort of
thinking, yeah, well, he kind of explored as many ideas in 20 minutes less running time and didn't borrow elements, you know what I mean, from other records. That was, that just felt like an original piece. This is more like a mix.
This seems like a stopgap.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
No, seems like a stopgap. Yeah. Very good. We've already said our favorite track, so what's your score out of 10 for?
I'd say 7.
Call me if you get lost.
It's 7. It's good. It's good.
Good stuff. I'm actually going to give it an 8. I like I said, I think that's the difference. I
what did you give Igor? Was it?
Oh, I'm sure I gave it a 10. If I didn't give it a 10 on the show,
it's been like
I probably gave it a 9, but it's led with time has told, right?
Yeah.
That album is a 10.
Okay.
But I think this is a good follow-up, but it's not better than Igor.
No.
Okay, so that's Call Me If You Get Lost by Tyler, the Creator, and lots of other people. next up, shall we dip into an old friend?
Which old friend?
Let's talk about Beba Doobie. So, our extended play is the... it's not the first EP from Beatrice Laus, but I think it's the first EP in a while. She's just been cranking out a lot of music the last couple of years for a woman who's just turned 21, I think.
That's nuts.
Yep. She's prolific and she's fantastic. I believe the last EP was possibly Space Cadet in 2019, and then of course we covered Fake It Flowers, her debut album, on the show last year, and that was
a lot of stuff.
It didn't make it into my top 20, but it was bubbling under. I really, really liked that album.
You were really shining about it. I fell off. But you know, I appreciate it for what it was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Beba Doobie, you know, it's a 90s revival, not like a 90s alt rock, alt pop revival artist. I think that's fair to say, right?
Youngins who never lived in the 90s kind of schooling us on kind of 90s, their appreciation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All things grunge.
The amount of love I have for the 80s, they have for the 90s. That kind of, they study it, right?
The amount of love she has for the 90s, I have for the 90s. We have a mutual love of the 90s, right? It's just she didn't live through them in any degree because she was born in 2000.
Yeah, so. Usually a lot of people who live through the eras kind of dread going back. Sometimes.
Interesting. I think I suppose you and I maybe in a little bit are in that sweet spot of. We experienced the 90s, but it wasn't like we came of age and that we were still kids, you know. So it still has like an aura of childhood mystery to it. But anyways, I think our extended play, it doesn't quite pick up where Fake It Flowers left off. But there's definitely a through line. I think this, for better or worse, very, very much speaks to a collaboration effort with Matty Healy and George Daniel from the 1975. So yeah, co-writes on everything.
My favorites.
Our favorites. Co-writes, co-producers on everything, and yeah, I think their fingers are probably all over this. Yeah. You can hear Matty Healy sings on most of the tracks.
Yeah.
So I just for overall impressions still.
Light.
Yes.
Feathery.
Yep. Sugary. Sugar bit, dust. Sugar
bit,
frosted.
Bit too much.
Mm.
Bit too much.
Okay.
I would say as you'd want an evolution from the last album, the main album. Mm-hmm. It's not.
No, it definitely there was nothing quite as sunshiny day glow as the two tracks that bookended, so which is Last Day on Earth and He Gets Me So High. Last Day on Earth has a real sort of almost like Sixpence None the Richer kind of thing going on. It's very 90s sugar pop. You could it's there's a good, you know, da da
da da da, sounds like Steps to me.
It's not quite Steps. I hear what you're saying, but it's a very major key affair, and that guitar line I do kind of recognize. It's lifting from something that actually was from the 90s. I can't think of
it. Doesn't go too far off those particular notes, the three notes.
No, it doesn't. No.
If it did, I'd be like, whoa, well done, but like, doesn't.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't take that much effort to surprise me.
Call it what it is. You know, lyrically, it's very much like, you know, the cat in the hat sat on the mat, and then shooby dooby dooby doo, shoop doop 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 doop. And I've.
Insert name reference here.
I don't think she actually says Beba Doobie, but she gets this close.
No, it does.
I think the production of that song suits it perfectly. It's too major key. It's way too simple. The lyrics are like asinine. They're so basic. I liked it on first listen. It's slowly started to grate. And then it's kind of a similar story with He Gets Me So High. Again, it's super syrupy.
Are you shit sandwiching this review?
I'm shit sandwiching this first review a little bit. Well, I want to get those two out of there. Those two are very similar, right?
Yes, I agree.
Those two sound like the 1975 featuring Beeby Doo Beyond vocals or something. You know, the main hook of that song, the actual hook, the "He Gets Me So High," is actually really good, but
it's kind of Oasis-y.
Yeah, a little bit. But can we agree that those two are not?
No,
they're not cooking my steak.
No, they're not. I was quite disappointed, to be honest.
Yeah,
quite disappointed.
But here's the thing. I think Cologne nearly absolves all of the sins of those two tracks.
I wish it was all Cologne.
Oh,
to be honest.
Man, that's what I was just listening Cologne. To that. Just saying, this is achieving that rare thing of sounding extremely 90s, but also having
early 2000s,
but also having a gigantic production. And I don't think sounding like anybody in particular.
I think it sounds very placebo era black market music, which is 2001.
Okay, yeah.
So that kind of sweet spot.
But yeah, you know, you're okay, fair enough. You make a very solid point with Placebo. But I absolutely love, you know, like the way that those bendies and the lead guitar part come in during the chorus. The you know, the guitar in verse two has loads of like chromatic, like single step changes. Mm-hmm. The production's fantastic. Drumming is great, in fairness to George I think he does a really good job on that track.
He does.
And then out of nowhere we get something she's never done before, which is that big industrial, like down in the boots riffing towards the end.
That was very Placebo. I'm right on the ball.
The P word didn't enter my brain as I was listening, but the second you said it was,
trust me, I'm honed down to it. They can't Beeba Doobie cannot escape
the magnifying glass. Brian Malko's legal team.
No.
But it's a great song. I think it's a really, really good song.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, the "Kiss My Neck." She just has a great way with the melody.
She's fantastic voice all around, even in the shite songs. It's silky smooth, right?
Hear me out. This is where we're going to diverge, right?
Are we?
You don't like you don't like animal noises. Is it too much? Is it just too?
It feels pretty hollow.
Okay, here's why I like it, right? And this is just a thing that's particular to me. It sounds like Goo Goo Dolls, and I absolutely love the Goo Goo Dolls.
This is news to me. Okay.
I fucking love them. The problem is that they're not an albums band. They have one good album. Maybe they will do that one day, but they're a greatest hits band. Okay. But nonetheless, I am a sucker for a slightly somber, big, full-hearted acoustic ballad with like banjo or mandolin and strings.
I guess this is just where they decided to put the rice cracker rock, as
right.
I call it.
Okay, sure.
Where it's 99%
rice cracker with like
99% air.
But a little bit of like a dusting of chocolate on the top or something. What's wrong with a rice cracker?
I'm glad this is not the next step. More like a summer weekend off.
Stopgap
kind of EP.
I hear you.
They're quite clearly not writing off of this. Like, they depend on it.
Yeah, this was, I think by her own admission, this was like a chill vibe that just sort of came together sometime around last June or July, and they kind of wrote these songs and got them out there. I think for Cologne alone this justifies its existence. My first impression is this, by the way. I was ready to give this like a 9. I loved it, but the bubblegum has well and truly lost its flavor on those first and last tracks. So for me,
and the third is bubblegum as all get out.
It's like double bubble. It's got a little bit extra. For me, it's got a little extra.
Barely
tang.
Has a full stop between He Gets Me High on it. It's more.
No,
like
I like animal noises. I can't concede the point, but. I get why you're saying it. That's because I have a weird inexplicable love of the Goo Goo Dolls. That's the only reason. So for me, I'm getting a real 5 vibe from you right now.
Probably less.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I only like one song and Not even that much.
Oh wow! I can't really give it a 7 now.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you gonna go for?
Probably a 4.
4. Okay, and obviously Kelowna. I mean, that's Kelowna's clearly the best song, so we're gonna have to. Okay, well, I can't give it a 7. You go. So I'll give it a 6.
I'll give it a 6.
I realized I was gonna lose, but I was kind of losing the run of myself.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. I want them to be even more dangerous with what they do.
I have to say, shout out to the art direction. It is definitely evocative of like the year, maybe yeah. 2001 at the latest.
I'm pretty sure that what's that Oasis album has the exact colors. They're all sitting by a table.
Definitely, maybe the first one where yeah. they're all in the living room.
Yeah, that's the same color palette.
This to me is more like, I don't know, Hanson or something. I don't know. It's.
Yeah, give me a second.
I'm trying to
yeah,
think.
Yeah, that's the... Look at that. Exact same colour palette.
It's similar. It's very similar. Oh, no.
Exact same.
It's this... I mean, that cover is definitely evoking an era, as is the font. I feel like I recognise the font from something really specific, but I cannot for the life of me. Is it Bush?
Maybe.
Sure, maybe it's Bush. Anyway, that's our extended play by Beba Doobie. Go listen to Cologne. It's well worth your time. The others, you know, your mileage may vary. Fair enough.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what they do next. I guess.
I mean, I really genuinely cannot wait to hear what she does next. So, yeah.
Be dangerous with your music. Don't, you know, I'm sure this is a fine thing to do, but, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of, 9 is the 5th studio album from the London-based anonymous collective Salt. That's spelled S-A-U-L-T. This group has been getting a huge amount of critical praise, right? You know, they've released 5 albums since 2019
yeah.
when they started, which is just like it's unheard of. It's they're so prolific, and these are not short albums. Their albums are, this I think is their shortest to date,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
at 35 minutes. But last year they released 2 albums that were close to an hour each, and they've kind of in an interesting way very much sort of soundtracked and reflected a lot of the civil unrest and controversy and kind of I suppose social upheaval that's been happening on both sides of the Atlantic around, you know, the black experience and police brutality and all sorts of folks and all sorts of things. And I think they in particular try to highlight that police brutality is not just an American problem, but it's also a problem in England where they're from. But the collective does draw from American and British influences. There's contributors from both on each album. We don't know who the mastermind is, but the suspicion is that it's Inflow.
Yes.
Who is Michael Kiwanuka's producer. So
yeah, and there's a lot of people in this bubbling cauldron of social political genre boundless street.
What genre would you
R&B all the improv stuff. Yeah. Kind of feels like you're walking through this kind of this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And everybody in each garden is playing like a different genre of music.
Yeah.
It's like a block party of music almost.
Definitely. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think that's what they're trying to evoke a little bit as well.
But a sinister block party. But a chill block party. It's got a few little things.
It does. Yeah, it definitely does. And it's kind of nice to hear them do all of that in a slightly shorter runtime. Their albums could be really exhausting.
Happens to the others to be... I can't listen to the others technically, right?
You can.
Okay.
Yeah, this album weirdly is going supposedly going away forever on the 2nd of October. Yeah.
And the others are.
No, all of them, the whole discography? I thought it was just this one.
No, they're going as they go.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So that's they're in short, we don't realize it because they're released in such quick.
Yeah.
Such close proximity. I believe they're all going to be gone by the time.
Oh, Jesus. Well, go listen to Untitled.
Can you buy their stuff?
You can. On CD. They're on. Yes, they're on Rough Trade. You can buy their stuff if you want to keep it forever. I did not know that, but I know this one for sure is definitely going away. So listen to it while you can.
That's absurd.
But you like you
I
said,
think.
It's
or genius.
Kind of like the Mario All Stars or the Mario 35th Anniversary Edition.
Yeah.
Very odd, but you know, like you said, it is like going through an.
But have we discovered the intent behind that particular move?
No, I have no idea.
But, can you speculate?
Maybe.
Why in God's green earth would they?
Well, they have so much. I suppose they have so much material that maybe they might be making a statement about the worth of music, maybe something like that. You know, they're kind of trying to imbue it with more worth and saying
like
that
it reminds me of, in a different way, different media. When what was the show Markiplier did? It was this huge thing where they Markiplier and this other guy spent a year, Unasanus, okay. Like 1 year, where they just did all these fun events every day and broadcasted it, and at the end they did a live stream where they just deleted the whole channel.
Oh,
so I guess it's kind of the fleeting.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Experience like, of it, loving something at the
it,
moment.
The limitation and the ephemerality of it is what gives it value. Listen, I don't know, right? This album will be available forever. Trust yes. me. You might not, maybe not through official channels, but if you want to go and listen to it in 6 months' time, you'll be able to.
Yeah.
The block, if we're calling it that you're walking down, has people playing. You know, there's like schoolyard chants. There's sort of. It's kind of 70s cop music. There's soul. There's sort of trap. There's synth. There's sort of the garage maybe, or like drum and bass. You've got like, you know, sort of like almost Disney type ballads. There's chill hop, I guess, or what would you say, trip hop type stuff as well.
Yeah,
it's a real eclectic mix from start to finish. But is it any good?
It grows on you.
It does.
It does grow on you. Yeah. Slightly grates on me a little bit.
Mm.
But
I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
No, there's a few intentional reasons behind that, and I guess it's kind of referenced in the intro track where you hear a lot of these kids chanting.
Yeah.
Or a kind of kid is chanting of like laughing at something.
Mm.
Then it kind of alludes to what they're laughing at later on.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets a little bit more serious. And ominous.
It's that laughter in the face of sort of bleakness, I guess.
Yeah, it kind of hints at the dark side of nursery rhymes. Some of these melodies are kind of nursery rhyme-ish as well.
Can be.
Mm-hmm. But all with a dark edge.
Yeah.
Kind of like the way London Bridge is falling has dark, dark connotations.
Right.
As
does Ring Around the Roses, as we know. I think that first track definitely brings the two together. Is that line, because it sort of has a really cool kind of fuzzed up like wobbly bass line, and it kicks in great drumming and stuff, and then it sort of out of nowhere it does this like la 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 la. Is that London Bridge or is that Auld Lang Syne? Because to me it sounds like da 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 da. But anyway, it doesn't matter what it is.
I don't know.
It's some sort of children's nursery rhyme type thing that kicks in. I'm not entirely sure that works. I get why they did it, but Cleo Soul, who's the main female singer throughout this record, it does a great job, and she does, I think every time she pops up, she's, I think as far as like the melodic singing on the female side, I think it's just
fantastic.
Her. She's brilliant. Yeah, she's great, and there are unnamed contributors, but she is kind of a named one, and she's great. I think the grating parts that you mentioned, and it's kind of a shame, but You From London,
mm-hmm.
I have mm-hmm. very mixed feelings about.
Same. Okay. I like the music.
Yeah. I think the beat is this great, you know, it's like lo-fi hip-hop beats, but really well done. And this, I think she's a London rapper, Lil Sims, does a brilliant verse.
Mm.
There's kind of this sax and a chorus that sounds like it's coming out of a
very trip hoppy,
like a gramophone, like it's wafting in from the 20s.
Yeah, that's where the trip hop came from.
And then what the fuck, that clip, best as I can tell, it might be an artist called Kid Sister who has some association with this group.
Mm-hmm.
And she is American. It could be her.
That there lies the problem.
whoever this person is, right, contributed a track called But You Know You Ain't, which was on, I think, two albums ago. And it didn't grate on me, because the message of it was really good. It was mm-hmm. the message of it was like, you know, I see you putting like a black square in your Instagram. You say that like you mean this, but you know you don't. Like, I see you say that you're this, but I know you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. It was like this sort of, I see all your performance, but I know that it's false.
Yeah.
And it was done in that kind of jokey way, or that kind of lighthearted way, but it felt kind of essential. Yeah. This is just like the typical shite that an American gives to like a person from England or like Ireland. I mean, a lot of the comments are the same, but
or a guy who who was born in Boston, yeah, lived in a bookstore, and people laugh, are you from Boston? But it's like, I hear it a lot.
It's just an American rattling off a load of ill-informed stereotypes about English people in like a really kind of jokey, casual, buddy-buddy sort of way.
And I guess that kind of has its own merits and a point, right?
It goes on for way too long. It's something I don't want in song form.
But I get the point.
Oh, there are conversations that happen and stuff, and it's like, okay.
I get it. In like a comedy routine kind of thing, like you're explaining something that typically happens in real life.
Yeah.
A lot of this kind of deals with typical London living stuff.
Yeah, it does.
Not typical, but some of the darker edges of London living.
Yeah, it is. It's typical.
Yeah.
I think You From London, such a mixed bag. I really, really wish that clip wasn't in there. I'm sure they had their reasons, but it's...
But before it, we can go back a bit. There's a lot of cool stuff.
There's a lot of cool stuff.
Trap life, fear, and all.
Yes.
A lot of sinister stuff.
Yeah. Trap life is, again, trap life is another. Not like a chant or a gospel, but it just feels like a community singing in unison. That kind of trap life. They're quite
schoolyard singing,
straightforward melodies, but they're really effective. Fear, I think, is one of the
icy.
It's brilliant. Yeah, it's so good. It's so unsettling. The
fear is real. The realist fear.
The pain is real and stuff like that.
It kind of twists the words really nicely until it just blends into kind of this thing.
It sounds artificial and robotic, but when you really listen, you can hear that these are folks that the detached sort of sanitized nature of it is actually, it's all just coming from their singing. It's not actually, it's not been inserted into post-production, but it's really unsettling, but a great song, that song Fear.
Nice grooves.
The last song, I Come and Go On, Lights in Your Hands, because I think it begins very saccharine and very sweet.
Same as Nine, right?
Yeah, same as Nine. It sort of, it finishes with, I think Nine is better. I think Nine is almost indie. Sort of, it's got an indie feel to it, which I really like. And it has the While My Guitar Gently Weeps chord progression, which I'm always a fan of. I think Nine is actually fantastic. But Lights in Your Hands begins a bit too, like, weeper. You know, that kind of way. Like, this is where we're going to get everyone to get their lighters out and have a bit of a cry. But then halfway through, the drums kick in and all of a sudden it's like a soul track.
It is good. It's like how I wish that Dua Lipa album ended on. Remember, I was too keen on the Dua Lipa ending. Kind of those vibes.
If halfway through, like the drums kicked in.
I would have. So yeah.
I hear you on that one. It's, you know, it like that's, I think that's where it falls down this track. I think, the moments where it's so full of life and energy are excellent. And then a track like Alcohol, just, again, it's a good idea, but it's sort of a repetition of the same three or four lines over and over and over. It does start to wear you down a bit,
much like Alcohol.
But
Bittersweet's great. Or Bittersweets, sorry.
Bittersweets,
absolute gem. Gem, dude.
That's what they do great, and that's the, you know, those weirder parts of our pal Bibio, like Bibio or Tropics or Michael Kiwanuka or that kind of modern, really well done soul music. It sounds awesome. I love Bittersweets. I love that song. Actually reminded me a little of Kobayashi as well.
Kobayashi mixed with, I don't know, like pure imagination kind of whimsy.
Definitely.
Very sweet. Very cool.
Yeah. And then I think a lot of that energy comes into Nine. It's just, you know, and those are drums that you can really hear are being played by a human. Loads of like grace notes and stuff like that. That's it. It all just feels very
organic. Feels kind of big, like actual band.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of that stuff that kind of makes you think it's two people playing at once and then it's all band.
A lot of
cool little surprises. I can't really tell how many musicians are featured in this, but there's a lot, I think.
And no, they're not going to tell you. So.
No, and I don't mind that. I like the mystery, I think.
Yeah.
I like the mystery.
Yeah. Maybe I missed the misery.
It's
good. And then peppered all throughout, you've got pretty sobering kind of sort of pieces of spoken word.
Yep.
Mike's story. That's the story of a kid basically being told his dad has just been murdered. There's explanation of where different gang names come from. And, you know, there's so talking about, you know, what childhood was like growing up in, you know, say like in somewhere like Brixton or somewhere in London. You know, all that stuff, I think it works really well in this album because it's shorter, but I still am a slightly disappointed that there's as much stuff on it that doesn't musically resonate with me as much.
Lyrically, of course, like, I can't relate, but I appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
Like the darker stuff you have to grow up with in kind of pseudo gangland.
Yeah.
Like, oh, best friend kind of grew up, got into guns, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Shit, he was a good egg.
Yeah.
But this happened. Some serious stuff. So yeah, and so current.
It is. And I think they're really, like, they're just a very interesting group because again, they're so mysterious and they're creating work at such a frantic pace, and it is of a really high quality. If you go back and like listen as much as you can, like even just pick one of them. My favorite is Rise. But, you know, pick any of them. There's a really, really high standard to the music. And it's not music that's made easily. This isn't, you know, like a bedroom electronic project.
It could have easily been.
But you know, like, I'm not saying that stuff is easy to make. But this, it all sounds really like it was recorded by human beings in a room. And it's arranged and stuff. So it's kind of swings around a bit. The bits on this album that are great are really, really, really good. There's probably like maybe 10 or 11 minutes of it that I could take or leave. So
yeah,
that's but
very authentically London, I think.
Definitely, yeah, for sure. What is your favorite track?
Bittersweets. Absolutely.
Oh, this Bittersweets.
It reminds me of some Damon Albarn featured thing on the latest Gorilla stuff.
That is, you're absolutely right. And you know, the other track that I thought was very Gorillas and I wrote down was Fear. There's like,
oh,
this,
God, yeah.
It's like when the spoken word
first album era.
And the synth and the fuzz bass comes in, very, very first album.
Kind of, or White Light.
Yeah.
White Light.
Yeah. It's awesome. I think I'll take Nine though. I love Nine, and I think it's, I think if I think BB Doobie could have taken some lessons from that track in how to sort of make it a bit more classy.
Yeah, I think my favorite lyric from this whole thing was from London Gangs. It's a fight for life. No one's doing it right.
Yeah,
that's just like,
yeah,
world in a nutshell. 2020, London 2021.
Yeah, it is. It is. My God, it is just. It's a wild world out there. Yeah. That is Nine by Salt.
What a surprise! Thank you for getting that on the show.
Yeah, of course. I think it's always good to like to sort of dip into these more interesting, eclectic, and sort of mysterious artists and you know, like the Armed, I guess. But Salt is with
a bit more kind of meat behind it.
Yeah, political meat for sure. There definitely is in this band, and they're really good. I'm interested to see what they do on album number 6 in fucking 2 months' time, because that's how quickly they make music.
Is this all on vinyl?
Yeah.
Oh my God,
you can get it on vinyl.
This is a good vinyl album, guys.
Yeah, I'm sure it sounds huge. Dylan, I think it's time you chose what we do next.
Joywave.
All right.
How about them? They just passed by. What did we think of the last album?
I loved it.
I believe we liked previous stuff more, right?
No, not for me. I thought Possession was their best thing yet. We've covered Content.
Yeah, I loved Content. That's the thing, right?
Which is great.
That's the thing, and I think Possession kind of.
Yeah. Content was like the kind of mind explosion,
yeah.
And then Possession was the pop perfection, and I think this is where he's trying to
mix the two.
I think or at least he's trying to sort of add in maybe a slightly darker, more band type element to the music.
I totally get the band.
So Joywave is the brainchild and sort of I guess main project of Daniel Armbruster. It's, you know, he's the singer. He writes the songs, and then he's joined by Joseph Morinelli, Paul Brenner, and Benjamin Bailey to kind of fill it out. But this was largely kind of solo due to, you know, the little thing called the COVID-19 pandemic that we're all living through. So, you know, I think you can always hear the desperation in the in the voice. I think by virtue of the way that it was created, it does have definitely has a darker edge overall. This is called Every Window's a Mirror, by the way.
A little bleak, bleaker edge, maybe not dark, but
bleaker, kind of, yeah,
bleaker,
yeah, 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 yeah.
Bittersweet bleakness.
Bittersweet, definitely. Yeah, it's still infused with a lot of groove.
Oh, it has to be. Yeah, yeah.
And like swagger. There's definitely a lot of swagger, especially in that huge guitar solo that comes in and Pray for the Reboot.
Yeah, I mean, like, and then on the other end, it says saccharinely radio as it can be.
Yeah.
At points, every window is a mirror.
Oh yeah,
is a mirror. Is that in the chorus? I think very much.
Yeah.
The most radio they've been.
I think the most, and it's, yeah, we can't move for them, but they're definitely the most 1975.
Yeah.
They've been. I hear a lot of that on Every Window's a Mirror. And I think on that one, they're almost overcompensating with that chorus vocal effect, which they've used before.
It's very echo chambery, but
yeah, it's like adding intensity. It's like adding intensity that the music doesn't have by just making the voice really reverberant. Well, it sounds
like 10 voices.
Yeah.
10 separate echo chamber effects.
Yeah,
it's a bit too much.
I think so. I would agree with you. That song passes me by a little bit. I think it ends. I think kind of it ramps up really strongly towards the end.
Yeah. Back to where the EP is, right?
Yeah.
For me at least.
Yeah.
Which is real quality stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. After Coffee, we're kind of getting back on track, and that one is interesting. I think it sort of reminds me a little bit more about of maybe what Marina was doing in that album cover last time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's like a sort of a more socially anxious pop music, I guess. But then the inversion is wonderful, and that's where I would love to see them go. Almost more of a post-punk type.
It is very post-punk, bleak. As the good kind of bleak I like from this.
Yeah.
Finger pop.
Like beefy bass and kind of creepy vocals. And again, because the energy of that song is really intense, when they do that 10 voices sort of echo chamber vocal effect, it works much better. You know, the inversion has begun, and he really hits that hard.
This way, the way they're going, Joywave kind of reminds me a bit more of this band called Modwheel Mouse.
Ooh.
One of the keyboardists who toured with Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
For a large part of the With Teeth Year Zero kind of era stuff.
Still a great album.
But yeah.
Like, never hear anybody talk about With Teeth.
I know.
And it's so good.
I mean, we'll talk about that another day, all that stuff.
Oh yeah, well we actually already have.
We did, but I mean more Nine Inch Nails to come. There will
100%.
Be.
But no, but I agree. I think you're right. I do really enjoy. I kind of feel like Joywave now are moving into that space of former extreme singer makes sexy pop side project a la the Black Queen or Greg Puciato solo stuff or.
You're right.
What's Trent Reznor? Does Trent Reznor have like a sexy pop solo project, or am I crazy? Am I losing my mind? There's the one
he did with his wife.
Welcome to Oblivion.
Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah. But it's starting to
Modwheel Mood. Sorry, that's the name of the.
It's starting to sound like he might have some albums in his collection that we actually maybe suspected he didn't, and he's letting that plus a love of the 80s and plus a fantastic talent for production all come together to make something that I think on the next Joywave album is going to bear fruit in a big way.
Yeah, I think there's all prepping up to it. Establishing some curiosities that they left out from the last album, which I missed dearly. Some of the real dark artsy
I know
stuff
what you mean.
That was in the one I liked.
There was nothing like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Like in the song Content
yeah,
when
yeah.
when the roof caves in.
God,
yeah.
I love that album.
I know. It's great. But you see, I was just as into like the big kind of synth hits on Blast Off, you know. Yeah. Or the other main song, whatever it's called, Off Possession. What's the other coming? It's coming apart.
Yeah.
And I'm big into those huge Euro synths, but there's nothing like that on this.
No.
Yeah.
It's once again it feels a bit more kind of like a band.
Yeah, like a band. Exactly. It does. You know, like I say, I think interestingly, it's the opposite for me. It's the opposite of the BBDB album, where I felt like it started and ended, but the middle was good. For this, I think it starts and ends phenomenally well, and the middle sags a tiny bit, which on a four-track EP, you know, it's You mean it's not gonna topple Royal Yellow? Put
I'll
it
allow
way.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's an EP, yeah. Right? But you know.
Yeah,
we have a history of writing EPs.
We
know how much meat can go into such little stuff. So like
we do. Yeah, we do. Yeah, but I think on the strength of the best stuff here, which yeah reminds me of, like I say, Pray for the Reboot. Slinky, sexy, groovy, kind of creepy. It reminds me of the best stuff that like Soda Blonde would do, or that last Jesse Ware album. You know, like disco, but the world is ending. I love it, so I'm into it. That's my favorite track.
Apocalypto Disco.
Yeah, that's my favorite track. I would probably give this a 7.
Give this a 7 too. Inversion is my favorite as well.
All right. No, mine's Pray for the Reboot, but yours is Inversion.
Yeah.
And that's great. So yeah, so that's Every Window is a Mirror by Joywave. I think again, maybe what we said with the BB Doobies, we would like her to up her game slightly. I think if they continue on this trajectory,
yes,
we'll have some very interesting things to talk about on the next Joywave album. I think, well, we've only one more new release to do, so it's Drug Church.
We have covered these guys, or
we have we? Yeah, we did Cheer. They're 20, didn't we? I'm sure we did. We did. I know we did.
We did.
We covered Cheer, and Dylan, that was one of my favorite albums of that year. I did make it into my top 20.
Which is God, that was before the dark times. So
it was
4 years ago.
Yeah, that was. I just out of pure interest, it was my number 20. So it was that. That was
November 2018.
2018.
Jesus
yeah.
Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So the album. It I think it was late in the year it came out. It made it into my top 20, which was a pretty big feat for something that came out late in the year.
So this is quite a gap between their releases, right?
It is, yeah, and it's only 4 tracks, and it's quick. It's called Tawny is the name of the EP, but what I understand from the press release is this is really a filler, and their fourth album is coming
right
very
on
soon.
The edge, like within the year.
Well, with potentially before the end of the year, but if not, then right at the start of next year, which is great because I fucking love this band. And there's loads to love on this, I think.
Yeah, this is another kind of angle that EPs take where it's not so great at the start, but it gets really, really good for the last 3.
Boom,
so
exactly.
It's all patterns of EP.
Yeah, we've literally had strong, we've had bad start, bad finish, strong start, strong finish, and weak start, strong finish. And I agree, I think Head Off, it starts...
It sounds like other bands. To me, I feel I've heard it. I can't really distinguish what makes them very interesting, which they are.
They are.
And you hear that instantly with Tawny, right?
You do. Oh yeah, you do. Which I mean, Tawny is it's like that. It's the Drug Church magic potion. Which
this
is
band, you need. It needs to you need to put the Mentos in the cola for this band to explode.
Yeah. No, that's what they do.
Yeah.
They seem to sort of equally come from that, like the sort of post grunge. Like Teenagerist or Citizen or Balance and Composure, they have a lot of that melodicism or dive, that or even sort of post shoegaze. But they also have huge fucking hardcore guitars.
They have a Mastodon hiding behind them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it's that kind of same space that maybe Refused occupy, yeah. Where it's like they're inspired by a punk mentality. They also have a little.
Are they just idols, Mastodon? Is that the chamber I'm putting them under?
I feel like they have more like riffs. Like,
yes, they do have more riffs.
It's,
that's true.
It batters you over the head more directly than Idols, and production wise, it's much cleaner and grittier. I don't know.
We could be talking about Fucked Up technically, but you know.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, Fucked Up, I think, is a very good comparison point.
Also, a good album we haven't covered. This
oh,
year. But anyway,
yes. Oh,
maybe
yes.
At the end of the year we might talk about it. But
Year
anyway,
of the Horse.
I digress.
Year of the Horse. That is a good album. Drug Church, what I like about them is I almost feel like they're the dinosaur pileup of hardcore or something.
Okay.
Do you know? Like, they have big melodies, they have big guitars, and it's like pop songwriting, and it's great. Thanks to the vocals, which, and your man, sorry, and I do know his name, it's Patrick. All these hardcore vocalists are called Patrick. Patrick Kinnan is his name. And yeah, he can scream with the best of them. He's got a great, like, emotive singing voice. It's like a really good bellow. And I think it's
swore,
all
I swore he was your man from Mastodon.
Oh yeah,
the bassist
Troy.
Yeah, I swore. Yeah. I like I just that
yeah.
Guttural kind of
yeah.
thing he does. The bellow, right?
Yeah. You know, I definitely hear it. It's great. Yeah, it's great. It's like Turnstile on one end and Teenage Wrist on the other. It's like fun, like kind of. pissed off its head, like punk hardcore, but then also quite melodic and thoughtful alternative rock. Tony's a great song. Bliss Out as well. We've had the song for ages, but I do love the little bits of spoken word that he does. He did like that da 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 da. Well, I guess I'll see you. Da 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 da. Oh man, what a loss. I guess I'll catch you at the vigil.
He's it's just very shotgun punk rock.
Yeah,
but being very hardcore at the same
time. Is there another? I'm trying to think. There's another band that has as much personality and spoken word. They're almost like mini skits.
I'd say Bronx at their heaviest.
Yeah, it's not a bad shape.
The Bronx, sorry.
Yeah, the Bronx. They're definitely not the only band that do that kind of like spoken word thing. But they just do it so well. Yep. They just have some. They have some great lines that make no sense but are just really evocative. And that song Bliss Out has just such a gigantic solo, and again solo isn't something that you necessarily associate with punk, but
they do it so well.
They do. Do you know the last track is a cover?
It's
the Sing a Little Pop Song.
Yeah, I recognized it from somewhere. I just couldn't. I thought I was having some weird deja vu.
It's funny that I was actually really surprised.
And that's impressive. It's to kind of blur the line between,
because they've made it their own.
Yeah, they have.
It's from a band called Arc Welder. I actually am really excited to listen to the album that came from, because the original I listened is really good.
Yeah.
And they seem to be in the same wheelhouse as bands like kind of Jawbox.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of bad, but yeah, but like that kind of weird, or like maybe Handsome, like those weird hardcore but very much post hardcore
yes
90s bands. But they do a great job on that song. It sort of reminds me of Unlicensed Guidance Counselor from their last album, which was the one about pushing your sister's boyfriend down the stairs. Do you remember that song?
I do
between
now
that
I do.
And Foo Fighters and maybe Shiny No So Bright era Smashing Pumpkins, which I know you're not the biggest fan of. But
worse every year.
It gets better every year for me. But you hear what I'm saying about those. Okay, maybe that was in a way was taking from Smashing Pumpkins' earlier career. So let's just pick a different album then. But do you hear a bit of Smashing Pumpkins in that song? Checking the chorus.
Yeah,
guitar, the rising guitar and everything. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's great. This, I think, is really good.
Yeah.
I think this is really really,
really
good.
Really fucking good. I'm back on the band now. I think I kind of didn't ever re-ingrain myself into the last album, but I think I might
there's give some
context with further.
Yeah, there's something. There's really something to enjoy on everything. But Cheer for Me is the one.
It's a party EP.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's probably no mistaking Tawny being the best song. Right, that's the best one.
I think Remember to Freak Out's my favorite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because the album gains such heavy momentum till it gets to that point. I'm totally in it by then.
Yeah.
Escape
the Unescapable. It's always nice to hear him sing a song.
Yeah.
Because he so often
can do both.
Screams them. But yeah, he hits that one really well.
It's impressive.
Yeah, it is. It's great. I still think 7.
8.
All right, there we go. Interesting.
I had a party with this.
That's great to hear. So did I. But I think I have... You they had something to prove for you.
Well, I was coming off of Beba Doobie, and I was like,
for me, they had nothing.
I was like, oh my god,
for
I
me,
needed this.
I'm already so bought in. Cheer for Me has just gotten better and better and better with age. I think this isn't quite up there, but I can hear that it's a transitionary period for them, and I think there's lots to like here. So good stuff. Alright, that is it for the new releases this week. But
we have a new release for your ears, and
we have a new release for my ears.
Figure.
So that means we're hopping into our time machine and dialing in 1981, which is, we don't often go back that far, but we are going back 40 years.
I could have gone back further in their career.
Yeah, right, which is crazy. So Susie and the Banshees, dating all the way back, I believe, to 76.
If not a little earlier.
So Susie Sue, Steve Severin, Budgie, and John McGoak.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bit of a rotating cast of Susie and the Banshees.
But I think Susie and Steve are the two
main
characters, I guess. Yeah. This is their fourth album, so they're a fairly well established band at this point.
They had some big hitter albums even before this.
Yeah.
Like if that's a good sign of their quality off the bat, that the best album tops already chart top hitters early on, like I think off the gate they were gaining quite revolutionary momentum in like this newly established genre, which is, as we obsess about now, post-punk.
Yeah.
They were one of the first.
I gotta say, you know, hearing what I would categorize as Head on the Door era The Cure
was actually...
Well, I mean, that was 85 and this is 81. So, you know, this is only 2 years after Unknown Pleasures, as far as I know.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're all mates. Robert Smith has played guitar with them
really
many a times. I believe a great performance of them doing Spellbound with him playing the guitar.
Ah, nice.
And it's fucking hard, really, really complicated kind of guitar line, and
the picked
part,
yeah,
during the reverse more so.
Oh yeah, super. And again, I say super modern sounding only because the current trend is to take from what Susie and the Banshees are doing. So,
but the broad scope of this band, really, is post punk with kind of a hint of goth before.
Yeah,
kind of became goth.
Yeah, like just brutalist, like art punk. It's just, I actually feel a little bit bad that I hadn't heard this before, and that I've heard the name and never actually gone in on them.
You've heard freaking Bitch Falcon before. You've heard Susie and the Banshees. How do you feel now?
Fontaines DC, like girl band, you know, Idols. I mean, it's,
A Perfect Circle.
Yes.
Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah,
100%. Fucking Billy Corgan idolizes this album.
Yeah.
So go figure.
Yeah. I genuinely, you know, really feel like a bit of a fool listening to this. Cause,
that you are, but now, well, I, now, yeah, you, have no, it, but, now you have it. Now you have it.
You know, I sort of went, okay, well, I've got Joy Division, I've got The Cure. Do I need another?
This was my Joy Division, right?
You know, proto
for me
post punk thing. But the answer was yes, and yeah.
This is my Joy Division, I guess, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I think they do a little better job than Joy Division do.
Well, Joy Division, I suppose, the charm was always quite how bare bones it was, but it is nice to hear a group that were giving it. And again, I know this is a fourth album, but adding that, what would you call it? Like just that extra atmosphere and like arrangement and production. I mean, you're talking about,
you don't hear it often when somebody creates a genre, an aesthetic, right?
And I think they themselves, from what I understand, they didn't feel as though they had anything to do with goth.
They kind of
but and yet the sound that they created was so damn gothic.
As is every headliner of a trendsetter, kind of dreads their creation. Yeah. It's like Frankenstein.
Korn being like, don't call us metal. It's like, well, what the fuck else are you? You know?
I mean, at least MCR are like, or The Used were like, come on. Let's everybody's having a good time with this genre.
Definitely. Some things that surprised me. I mean, I think her voice is awesome. She kind of reminds me, I didn't know who I thought she reminded me of.
Davey Havok is quite inspired by
Susie.
Well.
Okay.
And you know, connected by post-punk, so
yes,
got that kind of very interesting voice that is totally surprising for the genre. They're kind of tiptoeing around and away from.
Yeah, there's plenty of interesting love again, but there's plenty of that. I would say like that, whether you want to call it Kate Bush or or Florence or Marina or whatever. There's a lot of that kind of woo kind of movement and like vocal theatrics which really work for some of these songs. I mean, like Halloween, for example, you know, again on Halloween I can hear not only in like the singing, but also I can hear a lot of maybe what influenced White Lung in the guitar work. Like there's some guitar work going all over the fretboard, super fast.
It's very what would I say, Oingo Boingo, kind of Nightmare Before Christmas, kind of Halloween before it was Halloween.
Absolutely.
I guess.
But also, I don't think
it captures the mood of Halloween. There's a spookiness.
Yeah,
there's an eeriness in the real like saw guitars.
Yeah,
saw blade guitars and.
But I don't think Comfort by Failure would exist without this band either.
No,
just listening. It's that deeply unsettling, like sparse atmospherics that you get on that, you know, the first Failure record that you get all over this album.
Yeah,
too.
And it's the combination of the rumbling drums and the guitar mainly.
And speaking of Korn and like new metal in general, Monitor has
bit of punk funk, right?
Punk funk, which like sort of hip hop metal is kind of what new metal is, but that kind of like the 0-1, the bum bum, yeah, like you could absolutely hear.
And then it does an untold thing, you know, where it's following a groove, and then it goes kind of double time with the groove.
Yeah.
That is like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Someone who was doing like something Korn do at their heaviest.
Yes. And actually the there's sort of a build up part in that song as well, and you know where it sounds like that build up part before it kicks in, and when it kicks in, it's very 80s, or it sounds 80s, but right before, it could be like a fan club song, and I really mean like that actual sound file could be a fan club or a Dinosaur Pile Up song in 2021.
Yeah.
But obviously when it would kick in, it would be totally different. But that's amazing to hear on an album, you know, something like that, that's on an album that's 40 years old.
Yeah.
Night
Shift kind of goes with that hard rock,
yeah,
arena guitar. Yeah, yeah. Like fully distorted guitar.
Grunge, again, like you can absolutely hear, like, you know, you could hear like Pearl Jam or Soundgarden in parts of that song, Night Shift. You could hear kind where they
spooky and atmospheric.
That. Yeah. On Sin in My Heart, which I think, you know, to sort of get it out of the way right now, which I think is probably the best track. First, I absolutely love Sin in My Heart.
They're all good in their different ways.
It sounds absolutely
each song,
just gigantic.
Each song really pulls its own.
Yeah.
Like Arabian Nights is kind of like, as far as singles go, really cool.
Yeah.
Stuff. And then you kind of, you really can hone into her lyrical content as well,
which at times is fairly dark, graphic and
fairly dark.
Yeah. Head cut in particular.
Arabian Nights kind of about the plight and mistreatment of women in the East.
Yep.
Yep. Being behind curtains, being just baby machines.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And that's during like the early 80s, so like
probably much worse, and it's bad now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Relevant, right? Still casting irrelevancies, even though it's kind of, this album is spooky, goth, juju, madness.
Yeah, kinda, juju's a good name for it.
Voodoo Dolly, the last song, being like the 7-minute epic of possession. Like,
yeah, for me, that last one, just a slightly bit too long. That's all I would say.
I don't think so. I think it's great in the way, like, you know, it's inspired bands like Bitch Falcon to do long ending songs.
Again, I'd say
grow and explode into just loudness.
Yeah.
I
did hear a bit of girl band Chaos on that track as well. Yeah, that kind of.
And then of course, like Into the Light is where it was where Bitch Falcon, I believe, are Bitch Falcon for what they are.
Oh, you think? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can hear it. That song in particular was the one that I thought was very The Cure.
Yeah, and it kind of got the descending guitar lick.
Yeah.
Really kind of the most chill they are in the album.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That, you know, the guitar gets there as well. It's light, feathery. Spellbound's got a bit of that as well, but it changes it up.
I thought Spellbound seems to be their most popular.
It's so fucking good.
Non-cover.
Dude. It's so good.
Because they have a cover of Passenger by Iggy Pop.
Yeah, and they also have Beatles cover. Hey, Prudence.
Oh, Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Sorry, yeah. Hey, Dear Prudence.
I always feel it's a bit sad when a band's like,
it's a fucking good cover.
It's a good cover. When covers are the ones that make it to the top. Spellbound is excellent, and it kind of has something that the rest of the album doesn't, in that it has that sort of, like, again, that sort of Wild West. You know, like
off kilter kind of acoustic guitar.
And one thing you never ever ever get on modern albums because of click tracks and beat monitor and what's it called, beat detector and stuff, is these
speeding
songs
up, slowing down, very
they kind of
iffy.
Stretch, they elasticate, they speed up, they slow down.
It feels very live.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Yeah. And I think Nigel Gray, the producer, did a fantastic job of, like, especially at the time when I think, you know, capturing this type of performance, it really had only been just invented.
Yeah, you can tell there's parts where it's a little tricky to get the largeness during the trebly moments and the bassy moments, because I think the bassy moments capture the hugeness effectively, but when the guitar comes in, it kind of it has a hard time focusing on both. Which is like modern bands like Bitch Falcon have an easier time getting both.
Absolutely. Like even getting something that sounds as full as the massive kind of
like
guitar chord
later on. Susan Banshees get that right.
Oh yeah, but I don't think they do step a bit further into the light side of things later in their career. I had a little listen, It's never quite as dark as this.
Yeah. Again. It gets a little poppier, but still has that cool kind of what does it remind me of the later stuff? Sinead O'Connor at her heaviest.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah, with like Cities and Dust and stuff. Which is 1986, so it's 6 years onwards. They kind of get the hang of production.
Yeah. And it was a different, like, musically, obviously, it was a huge time for kind of that pop sound and that sort of guitar, jangle guitar kind of pop, which I think they sort of moved into a little bit. Interestingly enough, Nigel Gray, the producer, what he was known for at the time was he had done the Police albums.
Mm-hmm.
And those...
You can tell.
Sounded so ahead of their time. And this, I think, does also sounds ahead of its time.
There is a connection, right?
Yeah.
Especially in the guitar, I think.
Yeah,
capture guitar. The guitar's special kind of spectral energy that both bands kind of have. Like that use of reverb that just explodes and makes kind of this very thin guitar sound.
Yeah.
Just... otherworldly. I like
that. The guitar effects and everything, it's
chorusy, but there's like a tape
delay
kind of going on. It's very authentic and weird, and
it's certainly as affected as guitar could kind of get back then.
I guess it's not tape delay because it's literally that's how it recorded it's absolutely that.
If you think back, I mean, if you think even just 10 years prior, you know, what was available and what was possible, it just, like, this album couldn't have been made. I don't think this album could have been made any earlier than it was. It just sounds like this must have absolutely blown people's brains out their skull when it came out.
Yeah, just see all the people who are in big bands now that were there zero.
For sure. And there's no
including
doubt
including fucking The Cure who were inspired by this as well.
But I think this definitely inspired not only like the post-punk movement but probably also sort of post-hardcore movement as well, and stuff like Fugazi and all that, even like Jawbox and things. You can just hear it. It's got a sense of freedom of expression and like freedom of where a song can go, what it can do.
Yeah,
you know, that the while still being kind of frostbitten and and kind of nasty.
Yeah, I love how I discovered this just on like my discovery of this band was just on this mixtape CD. Called like Dark Wave Hits, and that's where I discovered Rammstein with Du Hast and The Cure is a Forest, and then they had like what do they have off this, the first song actually.
Spellbound.
Yeah, it was all on there.
Spellbound. Yeah,
I have that CD somewhere here, but
I was gonna say that's very later. Very formative in your music taste.
It was totally just goth and everything surrounding it.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to have a mixed experience with goth, but then at the same time, I loved October Rust, and I think this is excellent as well. Yeah. And it's funny, you can even hear a bit of what this on the new Perturbator album. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to that, but that's
I did.
You know, there's definitely a hint of that, or Drab Majesty, all that kind of stuff.
It's everywhere, dude. Like
it is
a perfect circle. James E. Howe's guitar is kind of so similar. They have a song called Magdalena which has the same kind of guitar effect as the second song.
It's a great song.
Just so good. So good. I love that effect, and this has kind of where it started. I can't really go back and find this before them.
No,
that those of
like I think maybe Bauhaus
or Led Zeppelin ish
Joy Division
with no quarter kind of has that.
Yeah, obviously like nothing comes out of a complete vacuum, but to put these elements together in this way, it definitely feels incredibly like groundbreaking.
Yeah. And the live performances were really great.
Mm.
Like Susie Sue, I haven't talked about her too much in this, but like this has this absolute charisma.
Yeah.
Commands in a very Bush way, commands the audience.
Kind of a dance. I think I got sort of a Debbie Harry type charisma off her as well. Yeah, like, it's a very different genre, but like that kind of
is there.
Like aura, I guess, like of just fierce energy that she has, that she just commands the tracks.
Not afraid to just raise hell.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love like stuff that I would not have expected to hear outside of just it being gothy or whatever. Like I think is it Halloween that has the there's a few songs that are like kind of like da da ba da 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 da.
That's Halloween.
Da 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 da.
the rumbly. It's Tom Dalton drums, as I'll call them again.
Tom Dalton drums, which is really hard hitting and heavy. And all that's keeping them from sounding even heavier is just the fact that they're 40 years old production. But
I loved it. You know, I'd almost want to do a cover of like Halloween with whatever I like to do, but with that song, just to hear what it would sound like with a bit more rumble.
It's funny, some of their albums have that kind of like remastered edition, but not Juju. Now I don't know if that means it's not been properly remastered, but I wonder if a proper like I don't know if this was lost in that big fire. I don't know what label they were on. Do you remember there was the Universal fire? Someone could go back to the original master tapes and see what could be done to get this to sort of pull a Giles Martin on this. I just think it could be amazing.
Yeah, I still enjoy it. Like I can still put behind me what I've learned from modern production.
Yeah,
and I can still enjoy it.
It sounds great for what it is.
Yeah.
But it's always interesting to hear, like, you know, don't Duracity alter anything, but just sort of scan it in a 4K, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's really good. I'm glad that you brought this one in. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was an education.
It is. Still is. Yeah. Of course. Where are they now? Well, together they kind of ended in 1995, right? Did other stuff. She was in another band.
Oh.
That I don't know too much about. Well, pretty good as well.
What?
Different stuff. Yeah. So, you know.
But there's no festival circuit. There's no. There's no current iteration of Susie and the Banshees.
No.
Okay.
Not in their 60s, no.
What? That doesn't stop a lot of people.
It doesn't stop.
It certainly does not.
No. But, and I'd love to see where would it be now, of course.
Hashtag where they now. Yeah. There's almost a kind of a... You have to sort of respect it, you know, to disband and stay broken up.
It doesn't happen often.
No, it really doesn't in this day and age. No. I mean, they might hop back on the gravy train just to sort of fatten their pension funds before retirement. We shall see. Either way, though, that's been Juju by Susie and the Banshees. Susie, I mean, I'm sure you know, but I didn't. Siouxie.
Yeah, if you're a fan of like The Cure, Joy Division, Bauhaus, even.
Yep.
You'd like this.
You'll like this. Or modern stuff. The modern post-punk age, be that, whether that's like Fontaines, Bitch Falcon, or, you know, the likes of... White Lies, Interpol.
There's a band I can't remember. They were our number one a while back. They had the blue kind of
The
woman in the album cover was kind of red.
Charles Gambino?
No, red album cover and kind of this blue painted woman on it. They were goth as well.
Not Phoebe Bridgers. No.
No.
The band.
Yeah, they were kind of gothy.
Gosh, and when you say they were number one, like I liked them.
Grave Pleasures.
Oh, sorry, yes. Oh my god, Grave Pleasures. Yeah, right. Oh, Grave Pleasures wouldn't exist.
We're talking about dancey post-punk?
Yeah.
There you go.
Grave Pleasures would not exist.
Biggest modern example, I'd say.
They must be doing an album out soon. They must be. It's been ages.
They did the live one, right?
Yeah.
Last year. Pandemic.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining us. It has been... It's been a fun one. It's been a really eclectic one, which is always nice. We'll probably get back to a full slate of albums next time.
Yes.
Including one that came out yesterday or on Friday, which we will certainly be talking about in detail at the time. Friends of ours from down the road.
Mm.
But we'll leave that up to your imagination for now. Dylan, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for joining me. And as usual, you can find us. Just search Kill Shuffle wherever it is. If you want to email us, if you want to listen to the playlist, just search Kill Shuffle. There's nobody else. That's great SEO, so you'll find us. In the meantime, look after yourselves.
Talk to you soon. Stay frosty.
Bye-bye.